Hey, we're all looking to save, especially on medical bills, but where do you start? Now, unless you're a medical billing expert, finding savings, well, it can seem impossible. HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance, and they flag errors like overbilling or wrong codes and fraud. And you can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. Now, saving starts with knowing where to look. Go to their website. It's healthlock.com today before you see any other healthcare provider. Hey, did you know that one of the largest U.S. flags in the state of Georgia stands proudly in Pure Talk's parking lot? Now, to honor that flag, Pure Talk is supporting America's Warrior Partnership. Now, they have a mission to prevent veteran suicide. Now, you can help this great cause simply by making the switch to Pure Talk before Flag Day. Get America's most dependable 5G network for just $20 a month. Just go to puretalk.com/Sean, S-E-A-N, to make the switch. That's puretalk.com/Sean for superior cell phone service, and you get to help a vet in need. Hey, if you thought about upgrading your backyard, you should consider a Michael Phelps Swim Spa by Master Spas, combining the benefits of a hot tub and a pool. Now, your kids are going to have fun all year long with a spacious swimming area on one end, hydrotherapy massage jets on the other. It's proudly made in America with installation in under a day. Just use the promo code Hannity in the upper right-hand corner. When you go to masterspas.com, you can get up to $1,000 off. Exercise, relax, recover with the only hot tub and swim spa brand I trust, masterspas.com.
Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast.
All right, this portion of the Sean Hannity podcast is sponsored by Audible. Now, by signing up for a 30-day trial with Audible, you'll be able to get that audiobook you've always wanted to read for free. Now, discover where Audible audiobooks can take you. To get started, just go to audible.com/Hannity. That's audible.com/Hannity.
You know, there are some days you just start a program and, like, my blood is boiling. And as a result of reading the conclusions of this Benghazi committee report, it just happens to be one of those days because there's so many revelations here that ought to make your blood boil. And it ought to be the biggest, most corrupt political story since Watergate. It is that profound. It is that insane. But anyway, let me just start at the beginning. Do you know that President Obama failed to warn Americans about that are on ISIS kill lists? Now, I know for a fact that an ISIS person at one point threatened me because I was told by the Mossad, in other words, the Israeli intelligence people, telling our Fox security people. I didn't get warned by our government. And this is years ago. And then it ends up that the guy that had threatened me, this has to do with a social media threat. I won't go into the specifics. Turns out, apparently, I was told later that he was killed in a drone strike. But my government never told me. But the Israeli government told Fox Security that I need to take this certain person seriously when he'd said he wanted my head on a spike. And there are Americans out there that literally have not been warned by our government, and they're on a kill list of ISIS. Now, I want to get into some other issues here. The next time you hear Barack Obama talk about how much he respects the men and women in uniform who lay down their lives to keep us safe, I hope you remember this Benghazi report, because in it I discovered, and it's a point that I did not know, that Barack Obama, your president, literally skipped his daily intelligence briefing one day after the Benghazi attacks on September 11, 2012. Now, we've been told he doesn't really pay much attention to them anyway, but really, is that the day you want to miss your presidential daily intelligence briefing? I don't think so. The president's briefer handed a written copy of the presidential daily briefing to a White House usher and then briefed Jack Lew, who was then serving as the White House chief of staff. But Obama, who sometimes avails himself of the oral briefing that is offered by along with the written intelligence product, did not ask for a briefing the day after the attacks on the U.S. facilities in Libya. Now, I want you to pay very close attention to what we learn in this report, because it should devastate you. Now, this confirms that the Obama administration literally withheld help when Americans were dying, when American heroes were under fire. It proves what I have said from the very beginning. that even though Ambassador Stevens and others had made hundreds of security requests as Libya and Benghazi specifically were becoming hotbeds of terrorism for al-Qaeda and other groups, every single time the requests were made, those requests were denied. So our government failed spectacularly before the attacks ever took place by denying the very support that was requested by the people that actually were there on the ground and knew the depth of the threat that they were under. That is a massive failure in and of itself. And then we find out, and this I think really should blow your mind. Let me read from the supplemental report by Mike Pompeo and Jim Jordan. Those in Washington decided that once the initial attack at the state compound had ended and our men moved to the annex, the enemy had retreated as well. And for those fighting for their lives in Benghazi that night, however, it was one long battle for survival, but the terrorists did not retreat. This view from Washington that the fight had ended is a lapse in judgment that may well haunt our nation for years to come. At the same time, Secretary Clinton appears to have concluded that the attack was over. Well, the men on the ground, they knew better. In the end, two men died from smoke inhalation at the State Department's compound during the initial attack involving dozens of extremists. Two more died from mortar fire at the end of a continuous, hours-long siege by approximately 100 heavily armed and highly trained fighters at the CIA annex. By the way, I thought this was a spontaneous demonstration. They just happened to have mortars in their back pocket when they went spontaneously to our annex?
What difference at this point does it make?
The truth matters. They conclude, we are now convinced that contrary, in other words, they lied, to the administration's public claim that the military did not have time to get to Benghazi, that the administration never launched men or machines to help directly in the fight. Wait till you hear the reason why in a minute. Now, that's very different from what we have been told to date, and the evidence is compelling. What has also emerged is a picture of the State Department eating up valuable time by insisting that certain elements of the U.S. military respond to Libya, get this, in civilian clothes, and they not use vehicles with United States markings. All right, I can agree on the car. But we're also told that military literally changed in and out of uniform at least three times. And meanwhile, the attack is ongoing and people are dying. Both restrictions appear to have been concessions to the Libyan government that did not want identifiable U.S. military presence on the streets of Libya. Why do we care what Libya thinks when American lives are at stake here? They cared more about what Libya thought in this process. It's unbelievable. We will never know exactly how long these conditions delayed the military response, but that they were even a part of the discussion is troubling. Yeah, very troubling. And before, during, and after the attacks of September the 11th, 2012 in Benghazi, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton put politics ahead of people, pulling out all the stops to cover up the fact that she didn't act when American lives were on the line, focusing more on spin and media narrative before an election than securing American lives under attack by terrorists. That's just the beginning. Let me read some of the highlights from this report, because the email shows, by the way, so many different things on so many levels that are wrong. Let me read from page 141. Despite President Obama and Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta's clear orders. Now, remember, it was 4 o'clock our time, 3:30 our time. Leon Panetta had a scheduled meeting with Obama. He came in and said it was a terrorist attack. He identified it that day. Anyway, so they ordered deployment of military assets and nothing was sent to Benghazi. So they didn't give the security before the attacks that the ambassador and others had requested hundreds of times. During the attack, nothing was sent. Nothing was en route to Libya at the time the last two Americans were killed. That was 8 hours after the attacks began. So you had Ambassador Stevens missing. The White House at 7:30, we still had 4 hours left to save lives. They had a two-hour meeting at the White House, which, by the way, the highest-ranking cabinet official to attend was Secretary Clinton. Where was Obama? with the 3 a.m. call. Anyway, so at the meeting, it resulted in action. Was it to save those Americans under fire? Nope. Apparently, there's drone video. Apparently, they knew it was ongoing. Apparently, there's even video from within the complex that we have that we've never been shown. Why have we not been shown this? We also know, because I've interviewed Tanto Peronto and all these other guys, these heroes of Libya, and they were told three times, they were a mile away, 2 miles away at the CIA annex, adjacent to the ambassador's headquarters. And they all got stacked up with their arms ready to go because they knew they were under, their fellow Americans were under fire. Three times they were told to stand down. The fourth time they walked out, risking their entire career. And in the case of Ty Woods and Glenn Daugherty, they gave their life, defying the orders of their superiors to go save American lives. Meanwhile, back in Washington at 7:30, 4 hours after the attack started, Hillary and all these bureaucrats are having a meeting that resulted in actions not to save Americans. No, they were more concerned about the politics of this and the failure of their policies. And they were focused on a YouTube video. And in the 7:30 meeting, they had phrases like, well, if any deployment, get this, if any deployment is made, quote, Libya must agree to any deployment. And we will not deploy until the order comes to go to either Tripoli or Benghazi. Well, the fight is in Benghazi. That shouldn't have been a hard decision. And to get permission to go save American lives when they're under a terror attack is beyond obnoxious. These are Americans dying, bleeding, and under fire. Go save them. That's what your job is. That's what your priority should be. The vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs, who would typically have been at that meeting, well, he wasn't there. He went home to host a dinner party of foreign dignitaries. A fleet anti-terrorism security team, oh, they sat on a plane in Spain for 3 hours and changed in and out of their uniforms four times because they couldn't decide whether or not they should go in uniform or not in uniform. And they never left to save our fellow Americans. None of the relevant military forces met their required deployment timelines, none of them. Five of the 10 actions from the 7:30 meeting at the White House, Hillary, the highest level cabinet official attending, referenced the video. They're thinking about the video, not saving Americans. They're thinking about getting permission. They're thinking about whether or not the guys in Spain should be in uniform and out of uniform instead of sending people in whatever they, I don't care if they're wearing their damn underwear. Go save them. That's where their thoughts ought to be. The State Department senior officials at the meeting had access to eyewitness accounts of the attack in real time during this meeting. They knew that the firefight was still ongoing. And the Diplomatic Security Command Center was in direct contact with the diplomatic security agents on the ground in Benghazi and sent out multiple updates about the situation, including, quote, terrorism event notification. So they knew terrorism was happening, not some spontaneous YouTube video concoction. And the State Department and Watts Center, they also notified Jake Sullivan and Cheryl Mills that it had set up a direct telephone line to Tripoli. Tripoli's not far away. We could have got guys there fast. And there was no mention of the video from the agents on the ground. Greg Hicks was one of the last people to talk to Chris Stevens before he died, and he said there was virtually no discussion about the video in Libya leading up to the attacks. And we also know afterwards that Hillary lied, too. How do we know? Because simultaneously, as she was telling her own daughter, the Libyan president the next day, the Egyptian prime minister the next day, that it was a terror attack, she was lying to you, the American people. And then a week later, she looked in the faces of Pat Smith and Charles Wood and the other family members who and Mrs. Daugherty and everybody else and lied to them straight to their face. And the morning after the attacks, the National Security Department spokesman sent an email to 24 people from the White House, Defense Department, State Department, intelligence community stating, quote, both the president and Secretary Clinton released statements this morning. Please refer to those for any comments for the time being. And to ensure we're all in sync on messaging the rest of the day, Ben Rhodes will host a conference call on USG communications and the chain, et cetera, et cetera. And minutes before the president delivered a speech in the Rhodes Garden, Jake Sullivan wrote in an email to Ben Rhodes and others, this was not really much violence in Egypt, and we're not saying that the violence in Libya erupted over inflammatory videos. And according to Susan Rice, Ben Rhodes and David Plouffe prepared for her appearances on the Sunday. Remember the five Sunday talk shows? Nobody from the FBI, the Department of Defense, the CIA participated in the prep call. So you have two political hacks, Rhodes and Plouffe. They're the ones that they played this as a political issue, not about four dead Americans at this point. At what difference at this point can it possibly make? Well, if we're victims of a terrorism attack like Orlando, like San Bernardino, like Chattanooga, like Boston, and yes, like Fort Hood, it wasn't workplace violence. We need to call it what it is. And this all gets to the heart of their inability to acknowledge and admit that radical Islamic terrorism is a real, clear, and present danger to every man, woman, and child in this country. These people didn't need to die. They requested security. It was denied. There was 8+ hours to save them, and we were worried about what clothes they were wearing and getting permission from Libya to defend them. And then we got lied to afterwards. And there are Americans out there that will still vote for this lady. What is wrong with you people? It's a betrayal of the highest order.
You know when a book just really hooks you and you just can't put it down? Well, with Audible, well, you don't have to. Discover where Audible audiobooks can take you. Now, maybe it's a book you've been wanting to read for a long time. Now, Audible has something special for everyone. So download your books or shows on your mobile device and listen anytime, anywhere. And with an unmatched selection of audiobooks, original audio shows, news, comedy, Audible is your best source for everyday entertainment. The Audible app makes listening a breeze with features like chapter navigation and narration speed control. So access your books, your shows, anytime, anywhere, right from your smartphone or your tablet. Join Audible today and explore the world's leading provider of audiobooks, all beautifully performed by talented actors and narrators. Now you can start a 30-day trial and download your first audiobook for free. Just go to audible.com/Hannity to get started. That's audible.com/Hannity for a 30-day trial and audiobook.
A Trump administration will change our failed trade policies, and I mean quickly. Here are 7 steps I would pursue right away to bring back our jobs. Number one, I am going to withdraw the United States from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which has not yet been ratified. I'm going to appoint the toughest and smartest, and I know them all, trade negotiators to fight on behalf of American workers. I'm going to direct the Secretary of Commerce to identify every violation of trade agreements a foreign country is currently using to harm you, the American worker. I will then direct all appropriate agencies to use every tool under American and international law to end these abuses. And abuse is the right word. Number four, I'm going to tell our NAFTA partners that I intend to immediately renegotiate the terms of that agreement to get a better deal by a lot, not just a little, by a lot for our workers. And if they don't agree to a renegotiation, which they might not because they're so used to having their own way, not with Trump, they won't have their own way, then I will submit under Article 2205 of the NAFTA agreement that America intends to withdraw from the deal. Number five, I'm going to instruct my Treasury Secretary to label China a currency manipulator, which should have been done years ago. Any country that devalues their currency in order to take unfair advantage of the United States, which is many countries, will be met with sharply. And that includes tariffs and taxes. Number six, I'm going to instruct the U.S. Trade Representative to bring trade cases against China, both in this country and at the WTO. China's unfair subsidy behavior is prohibited by the terms of its entrance to the WTO, and I intend to enforce those rules and regulations, and basically, I intend to enforce the agreements for all countries, including China. 7, if China does not stop its illegal activities, including its theft of American trade secrets, I will use every lawful present. Hey, look, this is very easy. This is so easy. I love saying this. I will use every lawful presidential power to remedy trade disputes, including the application of tariffs consistent with Section 201 and 301 of the Trade Act of 1974 and Section 232 of the Trade Expansion Act of 1962. And when they say trade expansion, they're talking about other countries. They're not talking about us because there is no expansion. They get the expansion, we get the joblessness. That's the way it works. Not going to happen anymore.
Laying out a powerful, very specific plan that is dramatically different from what we're doing right now. By the way, KT McFarland, she was a former foreign policy official in the Reagan administration. She said of this House Benghazi Committee final report that, quote, Clinton has blood on her hands. Now, just stop for a second. You think, oh, that's a powerful statement. That's a political. No, it's not. Why did they deny the requested security from the people on the ground? Hundreds of requests. Why would you do that? Or pull them out like the Red Cross and Great Britain did? Because things were so bad on the ground. Why did they not send in help during the attack? Who gave the stand down order to the head official at the CIA annex that was a mile or two away? That three times they were told to stand down, and all these guys had to literally put their careers and throw it up in smoke. Two of them died, in particular, Ty Woods and Glenn Doherty. And, of course, others survived, but they put their lives on their line, and lives were saved because of their brave and heroic actions. And you know what the most outrageous thing in this report is? They never talked to the people that were there. They never talked to the people on the ground. They never wanted to get to the truth. They didn't care about the truth in this report. You know, the CIA's September 13th assessment was full of errors because it became a political document. It mentions the early stage of the protest buried in one of the bullet points. The article cited to support the mention of protest in that instance from September the 4th. Now, that was a full week before the attacks to support the premise that a protest had occurred just prior to the September 11th attack. And a headline on the following page of the CIA's September 11th intelligence assessment stated, extremists capitalize on Benghazi protests. Nothing in the actual text box supports that title. It turns out the title of the text box was supposed to be extremists capitalized on Cairo protest. That small but vital difference from Cairo to Benghazi had major implications on how people in the administration were able to message the attacks. In other words, propagandize and lie to you, the American people. You know, a month before the attack, security on the ground was so bad, Ambassador Stevens planned to travel to Benghazi in early August. He had to cancel the trip. Most Americans never knew that because of Ramadan and security reasons. Even Leon Panetta told the committee, quote, an intelligence failure occurred with respect to Benghazi. Former CIA Deputy Director Mike Morrell also acknowledged multiple times an intelligence failure did, in fact, occur prior to the attacks. The president skips his presidential daily briefing the day after the attacks, neither accepting the document or even getting briefed. Also, in the pages of the report, it gets worse and worse and worse. It's unbelievable to me. That's your government. By the way, the same government that told you, if you like your doctor, you keep your doctor. You like your plan, you keep your plan. On average, the average family is going to save $2,500 per family per year. Now it's up 40% this year, 35% last year. The same government that said they'd create jobs tells you the unemployment rate is down. We have the lowest labor participation rate and since the 1970s. They just lie outright to you. They tell you the economy's good. You have millions more in poverty, millions more in food stamps, millions more out of the labor force. You have one in five American families that don't have a single member of their family working. You have one in six American men, 18 to 34. Guess what their lives are like? Well, they're either in jail or out of work living in mommy and daddy's basement. That's how bad things are in the economy. And yet people are going to take this. You know what Hillary Clinton said? She said, well, the Benghazi report shows it's time to move on. What difference at this point does it make anyway? She said that today. She declared this morning it's time to move on. Oh, okay, we'll move on to the email server scandal where you lied there too? Or that you will move on to the way you treated Secret Service officers and agents? Throwing a Bible at the head of a Secret Service officer and telling them to go F themselves and telling them to go to hell? But if there are people around, guests around, donors around, oh, then you say, oh, he's my favorite officer. I told him to go to hell yesterday, but he's really my favorite officer. He's such a good guy. And then they want to talk about Donald Trump's temperament for the job. You know, the Benghazi committee emails show a big payout, by the way, to a Hillary insider. LA Times reports that one of the emails released yesterday by Democrats on the committee shows the absurd amounts of money people in the orbit of the Clintons sometimes seem to rake in just for being in the orbits of the Clintons. I'd say about $200,000 a year, Hillary confidant Sid Vicious Blumenthal said when asked by a committee how much his part-time work advising Media Matters was worth. Well, Media Matters is the David Brock front group, and just like another front group that Sid Vicious Blumenthal also gets paid by, and that's basically to attack and assassinate the character of anyone that dares to tell the truth about the Clintons. That's pretty much what that thing is all about. Not that complicated. On the political side, I see Scott. Oh, there's one other thing. This was the last sentence, and I think this is amazing. Other conservatives found the report like the security at Benghazi inadequate. While the report from the Select Committee on Benghazi shines some light on the widespread incompetence reaching the highest levels of government, I find it incomprehensible and insulting that this committee spent 2 years and $7 million in taxpayer dollars to release an 800-page report with no firm findings or conclusions. David Buzzell, the head of For America Advocacy Group, he said the panel's failure to hold the administration accountable is the reason why American voters are turning to the likes of Donald Trump. This is so sad. You know, I've actually met and interviewed the guys that were there. Go see the movie. Rent the DVD, 13 hours. You know, I've talked to the guys. They say it's as real as it can be. I've talked to the guys and what they did. You know, Tonto Peronto says whenever, and his fellow brave soldiers, they were shocked. They knew it was a lie from day one when they said it was a YouTube video, spontaneous demonstration nonsense. They're sitting there, and then do you think they'd go and actually interview and ask these guys what it is that happened that night? No, why talk to them? Let's rely on Langley, Virginia to base our report. This way we can really cover our assets and we'll get political operatives within the intelligence community to write up exactly what we need so we can whitewash the whole thing and lie to the families that lost loved ones. Now, look in the eye of Charles Woods and Ty Woods' family and tell me that I couldn't do it. These are wonderful people. Their brother was a hero. Their son was a hero. Glenn Doherty, same thing. Sean Smith, Pat Smith. I met Pat Smith, his mother. She knows Hillary's lied and is lying. Ambassador, the first ambassador killed in, what, 30 or 40 years. And he'd been warning that this situation's untenable. They didn't listen to him. 800-941-SEAN is our number. Ruben is in Miami, News Radio 600 WIOD. How are you, sir?
Hello, Sean.
What's going on?
Yes, sir. This is scandalous. It's beyond reproach. I believe that the only way that we're going to be able to deal with this, because we know that the Senate and Congress is not going to impeach is not going to remove Hillary Clinton. That's why I call her. I'm sorry if that offends anybody. The Democrats are playing by their playbook. They stalled and they pushed and they stalled until right at the very end. They knew that if they carried the water for old Billary, this was going to be the outcome. Nothing was going to come about from the scandal from Benghazi. I believe that the only way that we're going to be able to have some type of legal means to destroy Hillary in her attempts for the White House.
Listen, I'm going to tell you something. Nobody cared that Barack Hussein Obama was an Alinskyite disciple, an Acorn organizer, a disciple of Frank Marshall Davis, that he went to the Church of GD America, and after 9/11, America's chickens coming home to roost. Nobody cared that he started his political career and gave speeches with and sat on boards with an unrepentant domestic terrorist who bombed the Pentagon, the Capitol, and New York City police headquarters. You know what? This is just another day walk in the park for Democrats. Corruption. We get the government we deserve. And right now you've got corrupt government that is tearing this country apart at its seams and destroying your children's future. This republic is in the midst of failing, collapsing, declining, dying. And this is like your last chance. You elect Hillary, this is what you're getting. A liar, a total fake, phony, and fraudulent woman with no record of success. And some people are going to buy the BS. The only thing she'll run on is Donald Trump is racist, sexist, homophobic. Donald Trump is wants to kill Granny, destroy the air and water, and ruin the country. That's her narrative.
Hillary Clinton is elected. It will be the end of the republic as we know it.
There's a point you can't recover. There's no doubt about it.
Correct. We will be beyond the point of recovery. I believe that the only way is for right now to take that report that came from Trey Gowdy and the GOP Republicans and those four service members' families sue the federal government for wrongful death, and subpoena every single Democrat.
Listen, I'm going to tell you, the average person's so busy keeping their head above water, they don't have time.
Good morning. Funny, isn't it? Funny, isn't it? Thank you very much for that very warm welcome. How things have changed. Isn't it funny? You know, when I came here 17 years ago and I said that I wanted to lead a campaign to get Britain to leave the European Union, you all laughed at me. Well, I have to say, you're not laughing now, are you? And the reason you're so upset, the reason you're so angry has been perfectly clear from all the angry exchanges this morning. You, as a political project, are in denial. You're in denial that your currency is failing. You're in denial. Well, just look at the Mediterranean. No. As a policy to impose poverty on Greece and the rest of the Mediterranean, you've done very well. And you're in denial over Mrs. Merkel's call last year for as many people as possible to cross the Mediterranean into the European Union has led to massive divisions between countries and within countries. But the biggest problem you've got, and the reason, the main reason the United Kingdom voted the way that it did, is you have, by stealth, by deception, without ever telling the truth to the British or the rest of the peoples of Europe, you have imposed upon them a political union. You've imposed upon them a political union. And when the people in 2005 in the Netherlands and France voted against that political union, when they rejected the Constitution, you simply ignored them and brought the Lisbon Treaty in through the back door.
You gotta love the British Parliament. You just got to love. It's so passionate, so fun, so entertaining. And that was Nigel Farage, who's a friend of this program. Now,
Before this leave or stay vote won, there's a guy that I know really well that made a prediction that the Trump people will be overjoyed if leave wins, said Austin Goolsbee, professor at the University of Chicago, former top economic advisor to Obama, by the way, partly responsible for doubling the debt and partly responsible for millions more in poverty on food stamps and out of the labor force. But we won't get into those details again. Austin Goolsbee joins us now. So we're in agreement. We agree here.
Well, wait a minute. First, I thought then was going to be the thank you, Austin, for helping us avoid a depression in this country. But you forgot to put
the stamp. Well,
I would argue, dear sir,
that the millions that are in poverty and on food stamps and out of the labor force are hardly celebrating that you saved them for a depression, because their lives are depressed and they are living the equivalent of a depression because your policies haven't worked. On top of that, you stole $10 trillion from our kids. But let's not, why quibble over $10
trillion? Okay, but
Which is irresponsible and unpatriotic.
We can have those debates, which when we have those, I've gone and looked up some new facts that you never, I've been taking everything you told me at face value. And our other experience on this program has now unfortunately taught me, Game of Thrones-like, that I can't trust anyone. If I can't trust Sean Hannity, who can I trust? I found new facts we'll get to in a second. But on this point, look, I think we are in agreement. I don't think I was wrong. You saw Donald Trump was thrilled that they voted to leave. And you saw in what was, to me, kind of a strange, bizarro world press conference at his golf course in Scotland, you saw Donald Trump say, "This is so great. I'm happy they're doing this." And then he said, "Because this is going to increase the demand for my golf course." But I think they're happy.
Well, I got to just tell you this. So, and I think this is really important. I think that the very issues that impacted Great Britain are the very issues that we face in this country. And that is, immigration has now contributed to a labor force participation rate that has never been lower since the 1970s, or higher if you're looking at it, depending which way you look at it. In other words, more people out of the labor force than we have had since the 1970s. Add to that more people in poverty, millions more. Add to that 12.5 million more people on food stamps. And what you have is all these illegal immigrants, they're competing for limited jobs available. And as they compete, they also drive down wages because many illegal immigrants will work for less. So the anger is now brewing and simmering just like it was. Now, add to that the refugee crisis. Hillary Clinton, if it was not bad enough, Obama wants to bring in so many refugees, even though our intelligence officials warn that ISIS will infiltrate that population. Hillary Clinton wants to increase that amount by 550,000. So what I'm saying to you is,
look, I hear what you're saying, but I think you're getting yourself, it's impressive, but you're getting yourself worked up in a number of ways that you probably shouldn't. The first is, now, I agree with you, the political dynamic does have similarities, I think, for sure, with what's happened in the UK and what Trumpism's doing in the U.S. If it were me, the Trump people are not asking my advice, but if they were, I would tell them that they probably should be a little more circumspect, because the world economy lost $2 trillion on the day the UK voted for Trumpism, and now most of the objective, not political, just objective analysts believe that the UK is about to go into a recession because they embrace Trumpism. So I don't know that Trump necessarily should have gotten himself so out in front of this, saying, yes, this is just like what I'm going to do, because everything that goes wrong in the UK from this point forward, I think Trump is now going to have part ownership of. And B, if you look at the U.S., the state of the economy is unrecognizable by the description that you gave it. The labor force participation rate, which is the lowest it's been in some time, is predominantly more than two-thirds because of the aging of the population. This is the oldest that the U.S. population has ever been, as you know, because the baby boom is
now you keep making. Why do you keep making excuses for the fact that
I'm
we have millions? No. We have millions of more. We have millions of people.
The participation rate in the last several years has actually improved. It's only in that early period that it got worse.
Well, I'm just telling you right now that you are so out of touch, you and all your rich liberal buddies, because as a result of your policies, we have 12.5 million more Americans in poverty and on food stamps, millions more out of the labor force. Let me finish. That want jobs and can't get jobs, and you're telling us that everything's great, and in the process, we rob from our kids. He accumulated more debt than every other president before him combined. Now, this is his eighth year. This is his final 6 months, thank God, because he's done enough damage in 7.5 years. So what you're saying here is you seem to be missing a tide of anger, and that is people are angry that are in poverty on food stamps and suffering. It's a depression for them, maybe not you. I know you work at the prestigious Booth School of Economics.
Oh, John, wait a minute. We have established many times that the net worth of the Sean Hannity household adds multiple zeros and factors over the net worth of the Goolsbee household. But that's okay. Let us walk through each of those. So take poverty. You have frequently told me, insinuating that the trend is going the wrong way, that there are more people in poverty now, and the poverty rate is higher than when Obama took off. But the poverty rate has been falling since 2010.
You know, I love this. There are 12 million more Americans in poverty today than when your boss, former boss, Barack Hussein Obama,
took office.
That's correct. And he did nothing in 7.5 years to get them out of poverty and give them a ladder to success. So
you keep telling me that.
And it's because it's true.
Two things, Sean, that you failed to mention to me. The first is that the poverty rate has been falling since 2010. All of the increase in poverty was a continuation of the trend that started in 2008 with the recession. So it goes way up in 8, 9 to 10 and has been falling since then. And number two, you failed to tell me that the poverty rate went up twice as much under President Ronald Reagan and went up more than three times as much under Presidents George W.
You know what's sad? Here it is 7.5 years into the Obama presidency, and all you have is to go back to Bush. But here's the fact.
While we
were doubling the debt, who is the only president in the history of this country never to reach a single year of 3% growth in GDP? There's only one. Who is it?
It's Barack Obama.
Barack Hussein Obama. As a matter of fact, he may come in lower than 2% growth in GDP over the 8 years he's president by the time all the numbers are finally counted.
You just conflated two things. One is, in the best year, it was his best year better than 3%. And it was not. We've had modest growth for an extended period. But we have had it for a very long time. And so over the course of all of the comeback years, our GDP
I want to get this straight.
Bush the father.
You're calling a doubling of the debt. You're calling 12 million more Americans in poverty on food stamps and the lowest labor participation rate since the 70s. You're calling that the comeback years?
Now, if you want to move to the food stamps, we can talk about that.
No. I want to be clear. I want our audience to understand this. This is important. So you're saying the comeback years are the years we doubled our national debt.
The comeback years, take everything as of 2010.
The Obama.
Let us divide the.
Well, wait a minute. He became president in January of 2009. So when we talk about the Reagan years, for example.
Divide it into two parts. There is the part that goes in the first 18 months he's in office.
And what is growth? What has growth been the last two quarters in this country?
The last two quarters? the last year
anemic,
a little over 2%.
Actually, it was recently adjusted downwards, in case you'd missed it, to below 2%
for that quarter,
for those quarters.
Yes, and the forecast made the quarter before those two was well above 2%.
You know,
and
why can't you know what bothers me?
Quarter is 2.9.
You know what bothers me is
take a 1 year average.
Is what you want to do is you want to remove some years of the presidency,
no,
include the other years of the president. No, you actually do
accurately look.
Okay,
at
there's a very good chance, according to economists that I'm reading in the Wall Street Journal and elsewhere, that we're heading into a recessionary period again.
Right now.
That's
correct. I don't think we are, but eventually there will be another recession. This is now the third longest recovery on record.
Okay, the weakest recovery on record, too.
No,
yes,
not the
yes,
weakest.
The weakest.
There was a time when it was the weakest, but it is no longer the weakest. That's
the last two quarters
it's
show
now
that
the third longest, and so we have at this point in the Bush recovery, we were in a recession. At this point in the George Herbert Walker Bush recovery, we were in a recession. So as you look at this thing over time, it's just slowly continuing to get better at a modest rate, but it is not the weakest recovery. It's now better than an average recovery.
I only in a liberal, twisted world of, you know what you're using? You ever hear
data.
Of, hang on, no.
Data.
Well, I'm using data too.
No, you're using
data. What you're using is, hang on a sec, you're using the, I know what you're doing, you're using the Washington calculator, where if somebody's unemployed for 6 months or longer, that you actually say that the unemployment rate's going down. You use the data that says $9 trillion in debt is irresponsible and unpatriotic, but $20 trillion is heroic on Obama's part because it's a liberal. I got it. I think I understand.
Deficit. You want to talk about the deficit? When Barack Obama takes office, the Congressional Budget Office says before he's ever done anything, the deficit is going to be more than $1 trillion a year just based on how the economy is going into the toilet. Before he's ever set foot there, it's going to be over $1 trillion. And he says he will cut it in half from what he inherited. And he did it. He did cut the deficit in half from what he inherited.
Okay. That, too, is, you know, only you include Bush numbers as a manufacturer. Listen, all I know is this. We have millions more in poverty, millions more on food stamps. We have the lowest labor participation rate since the 70s, and we doubled our debt and the lowest economic growth of any president in the history of this country.
No,
and
you,
Yeah. He's the only president who won't reach 3% GDP growth in his entire presidency, and you think it's good. I got it. I understand your math. I got it. No,
listen,
you might want to learn. Instead of the abacus that you use at the Booth School of Economics, you might want to try a calculator with real calculators. Just a thought. I'm just thinking here. Start in Atlanta, News Talk 750, and of course our FM stick 95.5 FM. As we check in with Josh in Atlanta. Josh, how are you?
Hey, Mr. Hannity. I'm a very young person. I'm only 22 years old, but I am very aware that Hillary Clinton is not the answer to be president of the United States. And what perplexes me about it is I don't understand how people, especially young people my age, they just simply ignore the facts against her. And they always just dismiss it as right-wing propaganda or conspiracy theories or whatever. But the issue is, they say, oh, she's a fighter. She fights for everybody. But the thing about it is, the two biggest groups of people that she comes to fight for, women and the LGBT community, she takes donations from regimes that literally enslave and murder those kinds of people just for simply who they are. And all at the same time, while giving speeches about income inequality while wearing $20,000 Armani suit jackets. I just don't get
it. Listen, to me, this is the most outrageous of things, you know, the greatest hypocrisy of Hillary Clinton. I mean, you know what? It really shows there are no guiding principles in them, that when it comes to money, you're going to take money from countries that go 1,000% against your stated values. Now, if she wants to do that, she can do that all that she wants. But the reality is, I could not in good conscience take money from a country that abuses women, gays, lesbians, Christians, and Jews like the Saudis and like all these other countries she took money from. Now, I don't know why it's not that big a deal to the left, because I would think that the left, remember the left and how strongly they felt about apartheid. And they went after companies that did business with South Africa at the time. Well, apartheid is horrible, and it is evil. Well, so is the treatment of women in Saudi Arabia and gays who can be executed in Saudi Arabia, and that you can't build a church or a synagogue in Saudi Arabia. I'm not taking their blood money. I don't want it. And the fact that we're still dependent on their oil makes us a very stupid country. We're dumb that we allow politicians to put us in this position that we need them. Anyway, good call. Appreciate it. 800-941-SEAN. Jim in San Francisco, KSFO. What's up, Jim? How are you? Glad you called, sir.
Thank you, Sean. And a belated Happy Father's Day to you.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Great. Listen, you know, just reading about this book of Hillary on Hillary and going through the kind of reviews and things and the talk about it, it seems as if that more and more people are sympathizing with her plight as it happened, you know, when all these revelations came out years ago. In fact, there's a sympathetic migration towards her.
Well, all I know is she has made, her campaign is not going to be about issues. As a matter of fact, are you a liberal? You a Hillary supporter?
Absolutely.
Okay, give me her five main positions. What are they? Ready, go.
Income inequality, children's and women's health. You got.
Can you be a little more specific? Because you're kind of giving me general cliches and platitudes. Be a little more specific. I'll let you go. Ready, go. Hit it.
Okay. You know, the income inequality as far as.
All right, I'll give you that one. I'll give you that one. I know what you mean by that. All right, go.
That's easy. You got children's health.
She wants to keep Obamacare. That's another way to say it.
Well, absolutely.
Okay, I mean, Obamacare premiums are up 40% this year.
It's nothing better. Believe me. I'd be out in the cold without Obamacare.
Nothing better?
Nothing better. I mean, you guys can't come up with anything.
Yeah, health care savings accounts.
6 years to do it, and you haven't done it.
No, well, Republicans have been weak and timid. They couldn't come up with a plan that Obama would ever sign. See, the bottom line is can't. Her campaign is this. Donald Trump doesn't have the temperament to be president, but here you have a Secret Service officer that saw her in action and is describing somebody that when the camera goes on, she's so loving to Bill and kind and nice. And when nobody's there, the second the camera goes off, she's a different person. And that she's a person that throws a vase at her husband and gives her husband a black eye. She's the person that berates George Stephanopoulos. George Stephanopoulos said that. And Dede Meyer said that. She's the person that tells agents to F off and to go to hell. And she's a person that is a phony. You know, she claims to be the loving, kind, wonderful liberal, but she appears to be paranoid, does not have the temperament to be president. And we also see that she's a liar. This whole Benghazi report today is one big lie, as we've been telling you all along. You know, the fact that they lied, they denied Ambassador Stevens the security he requested. They literally had a stand down order. I was shocked to learn that we had brave men and women in uniform. They were agonizing over whether they can send into Libya our men and women in their uniforms. So they had them get in and out of their uniforms 3 or 4 times. That's insane. We never sent anybody to help. I mean, they literally withheld help from dying Americans. You know, the only reason anybody was saved is because those people like Tonto Peronto and Ty Woods and Glenn Doherty disobeyed orders after they were told to stand down 3 times. And we know she lied in the aftermath because while telling us it was about a YouTube video and a spontaneous demonstration, she was telling her own daughter, the Libyan president, the Egyptian prime minister, something entirely differently. And that is that it was a terror attack. So let me ask you, does lying, you have any kids, Jim?
Yes.
Does it matter if your kids lie to you?
Oh, of course.
Does it matter if they lie on a scale like she lied to the parents of those brave people that died in Benghazi? She looked them right in the eye and lied right to their face. Does that bother you?
Yeah, of course it does. But
you're going to vote for a lady that could do that and lie to those people. You're willing to vote for her.
Here's the point. I don't think we even knew, and I think if you take any, you give the credit, this investigative committee, any credit for their work, which is hard for me to do, but I'm thinking you do.
But I'm asking you, you don't dispute that she lied because we have the emails that prove she did lie.
Well, at that point in time in the fog of war, you got to admit that a lot.
No,
goes
not
on.
In the fog of war. This was when the bodies were retrieved and brought back to the United States. She knew 100% it was a terror attack. And she still lied to the families.
Well, in the Rose Garden that day, that next day, it was called a terror attack.
No, it was not, because a month later, Barack Obama was still sticking to the story.
The Rose Garden the next day, even Mitt Romney was taken to task on that during the debate.
Excuse me. That was, I think, the Candy Crowley moment, if I remember correctly. Anyway, correct. I appreciate it. Andrea's next in Michigan. Andrea, look, there's some people that are just going to, it doesn't matter. If we had Hillary Clinton on video shooting somebody and then lying about it and say, I didn't pull the trigger, but you got the video of it, they're still going to vote for her. They'll still believe her. They still don't care. Andrea, Michigan. Hi, how are you? You're on the Sean Hannity Show.
Hi, Sean. I'm Andrea, and I could not be more of a 180 from your previous caller than anybody on the planet. You know how I feel about Hillary. And I think the Burns book is fantastic. I think the big shame of it is that it's making news. Because to those of us who've been following the news, it's not news. Everybody's known this for years. And I would also argue that all you have to do is see her give a speech. And within 3 minutes of her starting to talk, you can tell that she holds the people she's talking to in contempt, and she's furious with them that she has to stand there asking them to vote for her.
Well, I got to tell you something. You know, the fact that she would, like, go and pat Gary Byrne on the head and in front of people and put on a show and then tell him to go straight to hell, I mean, that is so conniving and devious and phony and fraudulent. You know, what he described as all of a sudden they'd have a TV interview and they'd all, the light goes on, boy, and it all comes out of them. And they're all lovey-dovey, kind, and they all get along and they care about the American people. But behind closed doors, very different people.
I used to be in theater and I saw that kind of thing all the time. And you can tell that, you know, somebody's tried to give her voice lessons, because when she starts her little speeches, they're softer now. They don't start with that shrieking edge that you used to have to hear from the get-go. But sooner or later, about 3 minutes, it starts creeping in again. And by the end, she's just yelling at everybody, because that's who she is.
Well, I think that's true. I think she's a very angry person. I also think, based on what Stephanopoulos and Dee Dee Myers and all the people around her say, you know what? I think nobody has the courage to even say anything. 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of the program. Ginger Grand Rapids, Wood Radio. How are you? Glad you called.
I'm doing great, Sean. How are you?
I'm good. What's happening?
Well, let's give Laura Lynch some kudos for teaching us how to love our local terrorists. You know, apparently they need hugs and kisses like everybody else in the world. What the heck is going on with our government? You know, we can't call a spade anymore.
Well, it's pretty sad. I mean, this is an enemy that's sworn to our destruction, right?
I agree.
Yeah, this is an enemy. You know, I talked to border agents. They're even crossing now the Mexican border.
It's just crazy. I'm like, and the hard part about that is I'm to the point where, you know, what do these people have to have somebody in their own family get hurt? It doesn't matter whether it's my family or your family.
Listen, I think if you're the family of Kate Steinle, and your daughter's killed by an illegal immigrant, or the guy that we had on, what was the name of the person we had on last week? The guy, his son was killed by an illegal immigrant that had been convicted of raping a woman and holding her captive for a week. And we had this father on, and I'm thinking, our government, they really are responsible for that. Steve Ronnebeck is his name. He's from Detroit, right? Yeah, we had him on. Oh, that was Mark Bondo from Orlando. Yeah, you're right. I mean, we have these people on all the time. They tell these stories, and these people should be alive today, except our government fails you. And nobody seems to get outraged. And then we have a congressman on that's actually trying to ensure that convicted felon illegal immigrants get sent back home, and he can't get enough support for that bill. It's unbelievable to me.
You know, our government has one job and one job only, and they get everything wrong, but they can't even get that one thing, and that is to keep us safe.
Well, I think that's what they're supposed to do, you know, protect us. The one role of government is that they're supposed to protect us. By the way, the Steinle anniversary is this week as we speak. You think her parents feel any better today than they felt a year ago? I tend to think not. Do you think they'll ever live their life the same way? I tend to think not. I tend to think that the rest of their life is going to probably suck because it's going to be in their mind the horror that happened. And she was, if I recall, walking with her father, arm in arm, when this happened. Died in her father's arms. And I'm thinking, wow. Now, if that happened to me, I'll be perfectly blunt. I'm so weak. I would be incapable of functioning. And I'm a pretty strong individual. I can function under the most dire of circumstances. Seriously. I deal with stress pretty damn good compared to most people I know. Pretty good at dealing with it. So I don't think I'd survive that. I just don't. I think of my baby girl, and my life's over. That day, it's over. And if I could go to Mr. Steinle's house, the only thing I could do is hug the guy and say, I'm sorry my government failed you. Our government failed you and your family. It's atrocious. It's evil. There's no excuse for it. Anyway, thank you. Bill in Alpharetta, Georgia, News Talk, 750, 95.5 FM, WSB. How are you, Bill?
I'm doing really well, Sean. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to suggest something that I found as a vacuum in this political season, and that is that we talked a lot about chief executive experience versus non-chief executive experience, which led us to our circumstances right now. And it seemed a big topic back then, but I have not heard anything about it. Well, so I just wanted to get your thoughts.
Listen, I think Trump, here's the interesting thing to me about Trump. What job has Hillary ever created except for prosecutors, investigators, and, you know, people, criminal law and government watchdog groups? Seriously. You know, I don't see that she's a, you know, I ask Hillary people all the time, supporters, tell me three specific things she has done to make the lives of the average American better. And they can't answer that question. And the reason they can't answer that question is because she hasn't made things better.
The Democrats on your committee say that you put out a lot of new details, but that they don't really change the fundamental understanding of what happened. And a lot of the broad themes that you've just discussed have been known for years. So at the end of the day, was this the best use of taxpayer dollars and of your time?
It is difficult for me to begin with where I disagree with the foundation of your question. So let me just start at the end of it. Nobody has ever reported that nothing was headed to Benghazi. Nobody's ever reported that not a single wheel was turning towards Libya. God knows nobody's ever reported who actually evacuated our folks. You may have reported that Secretary Clinton was headed back to Libya in October, but you didn't have the corroboration of the emails and you didn't know why she was going back. You didn't know about the $20 million memo. First of all, you didn't know about any of the emails from Ambassador Stevens. You didn't know about any of the emails from Sidney Blumenthal to whomever he was emailing. You didn't know that a single U.S. military asset did not meet a single designated timeline. Think about that for a second. The world's most powerful military did not meet a single solitary self-imposed timeline. So all of that is new. As for the Democrats, color me shocked that they are critical of our report. All five of them voted not to form the committee. They threatened not to participate, and for the most part, they did not. They have been serial leakers of information, and they missed a really good opportunity. I don't know if you've had a chance to read the report or not, but if you read the report, you will see their report mentions her name far more times than our report does. Our report doesn't mention the presumptive Republican nominee for president because he's got nothing to do with Benghazi.
All right, news roundup, information overload. That was Congressman Trey Gowdy and talking about the Benghazi report. Joining us now is Congressman Dave Pratt. He has a brand new book out, by the way. It's called American Underdog, Proof That Principles Matter. Congressman, how are you? We're glad you called, sir.
Hey, doing great, Sean. That's a good roundup. Trey Gowdy and Jim Jordan are on the case, so they're get the job done.
Well, you're part of the Freedom Coalition, of which I am a big supporter of, and that's part of the group that ousted John Boehner. And John Boehner, as Speaker, during his tenure, wouldn't use the power of the purse. He signed off on basically all of the Obama agenda, and that cost the taxpayers $5 trillion in new debt, almost $5
trillion. Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, this year, Paul Ryan, we've had in regular order, that sounds like kind of boring inside baseball, but that means the budget has to come out and we get a vote on the floor. Now, that process is broken down. And so we're going to do our best this year to have a CR so we don't have to go into another omnibus again and have the kind of leadership on our side and the leadership on the other side throw in the kitchen sink on the budget.
Yeah, well,
and so keep your eye on the.
But I mean, that's the thing.
Duck is probably the biggest risk to the country over the next few months.
You saw the exit polls during all of these primaries. You saw 65% of people do not trust Washington, and they feel betrayed by Republicans in Washington. Is that valid and real? Because I feel that way, and I'm a conservative.
Well, yeah, and that's what I'm trying to show in the book. I mean, if you just look at the economic fundamentals, right, skip all the media buzz and spin every day. That's all you hear. People lose track of what's upside down. So I try to focus on the Judeo-Christian tradition, which is under assault, and then the rule of law, which is under assault, and then the free market system. No one's even heard of that in D.C. And then you look at the basic numbers, $19 trillion in debt, $100 trillion in unfunded liabilities, and the kids aren't going to get any of the major systems, right? Every dollar is going to the mandatory spending side of the budget. In 10 years, there won't be a dollar left for the military, education, transportation, et cetera. And so I just try to lay all that out so that people are aware of what's going on. The media is so hard to follow. The Democrats are just way better street fighters than we are, right? They're doing a sit down on literally on the carpet last week on the gun thing. And the crux of that issue is Loretta Lynch.
But
AG,
you know what?
I
expect that from them. Seriously.
Yeah, right.
I mean, we knew what we were getting with Obama.
Right.
But what I didn't expect was Republicans rolling over. When you got the House,
right,
I figured Republicans would use their constitutional authority, the power of the purse. But all Obama had to say was, well, Republicans are going to shut down the government. And all your fellow congressmen ran for the hills and they got scared.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, after the Romney loss, we all used this autopsy report, which basically said we ought to be scared of our shadow and scared of our constituents and scared of every demographic group in the country. And that's no way to fight and get anything done. And so our leadership, I think, is finally starting to get the memo. But, I mean, you remember last year.
I honestly don't think so.
Yeah.
I really honestly don't
know,
think so.
I know.
I'll give you the example why. Donald Trump wins more votes in the Republican primary than any other person in history.
Yeah.
Any other person in history. And Paul Ryan is harsher on him than he ever was to either Obama or Hillary Clinton. That bothers me. Is that true or false?
No, that's hitting me. In last year's omnibus, there was a clear kind of slap at the grassroots. The number one issue back at the time was the illegal immigration, the southern border, the refugee crisis, the visa overstays. And so Brian Babin from Texas had a good bill, and I've been supporting that bill, and that was to stop all the immigration from the terrorist hotspot. And we had House majorities for that, and instead of putting that into must-pass legislation, we got the opposite. At the end of the year, leadership pushed for a 400% increase in H-2B visas. So just a 180-degree turn from what the people wanted to what all the crony and special interests wanted. And so that I feel the same way you do. The first positive news came this week with the Kevin Brady, the tax plan coming out of leadership is decent and is good. And so that's good. And we're at least trying to fight the fight against Obama. But we're just not effective at it. We had a little DACA relief last week with a court decision. And then the Brexit, it lines up with my book exactly. They need to exit and go back to what made England great, right? The Judeo-Christian tradition, the rule of law, and free markets under Adam Smith, the father of free markets. And I hope they do that. I hope they blaze the way and show us that you can get back to growth.
Let me go to this Benghazi report today. I want to read a couple of things out of this to you because it blows my mind.
Yep.
Despite President Obama and Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta's clear orders to deploy the military assets, nothing was sent to Benghazi. Nothing was en route to Libya at the time the last two Americans were killed 8 hours after the attack began. With Ambassador Stevens missing, the White House convened a roughly two-hour meeting at 7:30. By the way, this happened at 3:30 in the afternoon. And which resulted in action items focused on a YouTube video and others containing the phrases, well, if any deployment is made, Libya must agree to any deployment and will not deploy until the order comes to go to either Tripoli or Benghazi. Secretary Clinton was at the highest level a cabinet official to attend the meeting. Now, on top of that, we know there was a stand-down order. On top of that, I've talked to the guys that were at the CIA annex. They were told three times they disobeyed orders. Two of them ended up dying because they went and fought for their fellow countrymen that were under fire. And then we were lied to. We know that she knew the truth. It was a terror attack. And she told the American people it was related to a YouTube video. You know, how is it this is not the biggest bombshell since Watergate?
Well, it is. I mean, and that's what we have to all say. It is the biggest bombshell. And then the left and the spin machine will try to diminish it, but we have to stick to our guns on this stuff. And you're right. We need to put up a fight. And I think Lynn Westmoreland today in his testimony said they're going to put this thing up before leadership in the strongest terms. And so we'll see. The leadership of the Republican Party has to take this evidence and do something with it. The American people are just screaming at us, right? So what? What's going to happen? And that, unfortunately, the way the House works, we don't get to just vote on this stuff. It has to come up, and everything goes via leadership, including the budget, et cetera. And so train all eyes on leadership so they have pressure on them to do the right thing here.
Yeah. 5 of the 10 action items from the 7:30 p.m. Right. White House meeting referenced the video. No direct link or solid evidence existed connecting the attacks in Benghazi and a video at the time of the meeting that took place. Now, we know that while she was simultaneously telling the American people that this was related to a YouTube video and a spontaneous demonstration, I didn't know people spontaneously demonstrated and had RPGs in their back pocket, but apparently that's possible. And we know that she was telling the Libyan president, her own daughter, and the Egyptian prime minister it was a terrorist attack.
Right. Five of the action items were basically political, U.S. political posturing, and not in the best interest of the folks whose lives are on the line and in the best interest of the country. And that's what's going wrong. Too many public policymakers are just covering their own, futures, or however you want to put it, and they're not looking at the best interest of this country moving forward. Now you got Bernie on the socialist side promising free everything with an extra $20 trillion in debt. So nothing's free, but the K-12 education system is more concerned with a kid in the classroom which says, God bless you, and they get reprimanded for saying God bless you now in the K-12 classroom across the country. The culture is diminished, and we all need to start fighting. The founders fought hard.
But I don't think Republicans have the
stomach. We're taking a time out here.
I don't think Republicans have the stomach to fight. I think Republicans have showed
it doesn't look like it. But
what do you mean it doesn't look like it? Tell me what they're fighting on. I mean, all right,
I'll give
credit.
It doesn't look like it. We're not fighting. And I mean, just on the politics, on all the presidential winners this year were all outsiders in one way or the other. But the incumbents, all the incumbents won this year with the most part, a couple exceptions.
No.
But that's kind of an interesting split. And so if the money wins, right, money runs everything in D.C., and you got a $4 trillion budget you're doling out to cronies, and that model seems to be winning right now. We need us to put pressure on us to listen to the constituents instead of to the $4 trillion.
I think you were kind of your election beating Eric Cantor. You were like the canary in the coal mine.
Yeah.
And I just, for the life of me, this is what I don't understand. Is like in 2014, the entire election, wasn't it about stopping Obama's illegal, unconstitutional executive amnesty? Wasn't that
right,
what that election was about? And then in December of that year, Republicans, they were taking on a majority in the Senate, but then they gave away their leverage and did a Cromnibus bill, correct?
Yeah, right. And we funded it.
And they withheld funding for the Department of Homeland Security and promised that they would defund the department to stop Obama's illegal, unconstitutional actions, right?
Right.
And then they ended up funding it.
Right.
Yeah. So,
no,
I mean.
And then no one is held responsible for their votes on that. So that it's a demand. The elites are at fault, but the voters need to hold their officials responsible for that.
Yeah.
That's got to start happening.
You think Donald Trump will win? Do you feel confident that
I do. I think he's
will he take the state of Virginia even though will he win Virginia even though 200 plus thousand felons will be voting in this election?
Yeah, I know. That's an awesome. I think we're going to get that reversed. Most of the courts and most of the legislature on the other side knows he overstepped on that one, but it's going to be a hard state. There's a lot of government jobs, government workers, and the Jefferson and Madison would be rolling over to see what's happened to the Commonwealth.
Yeah, I know. I think they really would be. You know, the sad thing is I don't think we have very much time to turn this thing around. And maybe I'm just thinking too pessimistically, but, you know, if we have four more years of Obama via Hillary, I think that's a huge problem because we're just going to take on more debt. We're going to keep Obamacare, and that's going to get locked in even though we're having 40% increase. Every year. I see that our military is deteriorating quickly. I think the Democrats have always wanted open borders because they think they have generations now of a constituency to keep them in power. Republicans are short-sighted. They just want to cater to their big business buddies and you know, get cheap labor, which is stupid.
And the biggest trade-off that the left, right, the left wins kudos for their compassion somehow, right? I do not understand this. But they're the most compassionate party, except for that the kids were throwing the entire debt of the United States on the kids. And then in 10 years, all federal revenues are going to go to mandatory programs. And then those mandatory programs themselves are all insolvent in about 2034. That's not that far out. It's 18-year-olds right now will be about 36. When they're 36 years old, they're going to get a 20% cut automatically in all those programs and worse out from there. And so our side doesn't do a good job, right? Our leadership has big, bold visions on everything, but we never fight the fight and say, hey, kid, you better switch over to our party if you want to reform these programs so they last for you guys.
Yeah, but you know what? You're telling people to eat their vegetables. You're telling people to be responsible.
Right.
You're not telling them, oh, free everything, free education, free health care, free college tuition, free this, free that.
Yep.
All right,
yep.
Congressman.
No, that's the debate.
Yeah, thank you, sir.
We got to get to it, and it starts in education.
How about Republicans grow a spine and we can get to it? When they grow a spine and a backbone, then we can get to it. And
Warren and Harvard, right? Whatever Harvard does, about 40 years later, it's your common culture. And so the 60s radicals are in charge of all the elite institutions across the country, and it's showing. That's what we have. And so it matters who's in charge of those elite institutions. And the conservatives have abdicated. I mean, we got a few people left in there, but we've given up. And so the irony is that the boards of trustees of all these places are a bunch of conservatives funding the leftist agenda.
I got to run. The name of the book is American Underdog, Proof That Principles Matter. David Bratt, Congressman. Thank you, Congressman. Appreciate it. All right. We have former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich on. Of course, I'll sneak in a few political questions in a minute. And Patrick Kennedy is a former member of the House of Representatives. And boy, this is an odd political pairing, if ever I've heard one on the air together. Patrick, how are you?
I'm great, Sean. Thanks for having us on.
Mr. Speaker, it's always a pleasure to have you. Now, you guys have teamed up, and I've actually experienced this in my personal life where I know people that have gotten addicted to pain medication, opioids. Every 19 minutes, a person dies from this cycle of opioid addiction. It's now the leading cause of accidental death in America. I've seen doctors, lawyers, others get addicted to Percocet, Vicodin, OxyContin, and all these other medicines out there, even Ambien, believe it or not. And it is a real, real problem. And unfortunately, there's a lot of overprescribing. And if you look at the way kids are getting addicted now, which is now heroin is the big problem around the country, is they start 90% of the time with some type of pain pill, Vicodin, Percocet, or Oxy. And then they cost $80 a pill on the street, or they can get a $10 bag of heroin. And next thing you know, they're addicted and their life is ruined. And you guys have teamed up together. So, Mr. Speaker, tell us what you're doing.
Well, let me say, first of all, that I'm really honored to be with Patrick, and I'm grateful to you, Sean, for being concerned about an issue of this importance. And anybody listening who wants to can go to opioidrecovery.com. .org, opioidrecovery.org, and they will see what we're working on, which I think is very, very important. Now, let me just say, what we're trying to do is very simple. One, make people aware of the extraordinary scale of drug overdose deaths in America, more than the number of people who die from car wrecks. It has become an epidemic. Two, get them to understand that particularly with opioid recovery, there are approaches that are biologically sound that use medication to dramatically increase the likelihood of somebody successfully recovering. And it's a very, very important topic. And I'm just really grateful, Sean, that you would take time to talk about this because it affects the lives of so many people.
I have spent more time watching either Nat Geo or any of these other networks. And by the way, even if you watch any of the prison shows that are out there, you know, 80% of these guys in prison, it's all related to drugs and alcohol. And Patrick, I know you had a very public event, you know, when you were a congressman. And I remember I had Bob Beckel on at the time. And it may surprise you to hear that I actually said to Beckel, I feel sorry for Kennedy and I hope he gets the help. And apparently you did.
Yeah, well, thanks, Sean. I mean, it was a long process for me. Today, I'm living in complete abstinence from any drugs or alcohol. But for a good period of time, I was on opiate replacement therapy, what's known as buprenorphine. And I was one of the lucky ones, Sean, because less than 3% of the physicians around the country have the authorization for writing for this drug. And the irony is, Sean, that, of course, there's no limitations on doctors writing for OxyContin and Percocet and the things that get people addicted, but there's tons of regulations on them writing for the very medications to save them from dying of overdoses on the street because they originally got hooked because doctors were overprescribing the OxyContins and Percocets.
Yeah, I mean, it is so overprescribed. I mean, why is it that the doctors aren't more aware? Now, I'm putting aside the so-called pill mills and those issues. I know Pam Bondi did a really good job down in Florida on this, but, you know, the doctors, you know, it's like if somebody gets a tooth pilled, they're getting, you know, four prescriptions of pain pills. You know, I had four teeth pulled in one day, and I didn't take one pain pill. I don't get it.
Well, you know, one of the things that Patrick and I first worked on back when he was still in Congress was the whole notion of health information technology. And the reason that matters is sometimes you have a doctor who literally is dealing with one problem, doesn't realize what else may be going on in your life, doesn't realize that the thing they're about to prescribe for you is exactly the wrong thing. And so sometimes you have this kind of an ignorance-based mistake, which then leads the person back into addiction. And that's part of why the information flow is so very, very important. I think second, that we have for a long time underestimated the importance of brain science and underestimated the importance of mental health. And so we have been focused on treating your arm or treating your kidney or treating your heart. We haven't realized that these other factors can totally disrupt and change and ruin your life. And you've got to take the whole person together. And obviously the brain is a significant part of the whole person.
You know, I think that's all true. I think there's got to be a breakthrough way to deal with opiate addiction than, say, putting somebody on another medicine. Like, for example, I know that, and Bob Beckel's talked about this publicly, and he talked about it in his book, and I'm not saying anything because I know that he had gone through very tough times, and like he would take a pill every day that if he ever did drink, it would make him deathly ill. Now, that to me is better than some type of synthetic heroin in the form of what do they call that? Methadone that they give drug addicts, because you're still addicted to drugs, aren't you?
So, Sean, you know, when we have folks try to, you know, kick their smoking habit, you know, what do they use? They use a nicotine patch, or they have, you know, Nicorette, all right? You know, these are really, you know, nicotine replacement therapies, and no one questions that. You know, the brain is really hardwired for the nicotine addiction. And in like manner, when you have an opiate addiction, your brain is hardwired for the opiate in your brain. And if you don't get the opiate in the brain, Sean, your brain is screaming out, get me opiates, which means that people don't have the power of choice. They have to go and buy their heroin, okay? And, you know, you look at what happened to Prince. I mean, it's not as if he had called someone and said, oh, I'm going to make up my mind. This is really getting, I just almost overdosed the other night. Maybe I shouldn't do this. He was physically addicted. So what we need to do is have people be able to titrate down the opiates in their brain. And that needs to be done under the supervision of a doctor. And at the same time, they need to get the cognitive behavioral therapy
so they can learn how to live without taking opiates. But keep in mind that the brain, it takes a while for the brain to recover from having this opiate addiction.
Well, I don't know a lot about this. Look, all I know is I've never taken a Percocet, a Vicodin, or an OxyContin. You know why, Patrick? Because when you meet doctors and lawyers and professional people, and you know, these are all intelligent, smart people, and they get caught up in the trap of addiction, it's kind of scared me. Does that make sense?
Oh, I mean, Sean, I was in rehabilitation with a Navy SEAL.
Yeah.
Okay.
Toughest.
I mean, if a Navy SEAL, we all know how much ability to have willpower over the most incredible odds our special forces have. But if they are no match for addiction, then believe me, you know, it's hard to imagine anyone being able to combat this through power of self-will alone.
Yeah. Mr. Speaker, what are you guys proposing here? And tell everybody how they can go and get help.
Well, I think, first of all, what we're proposing in a very direct way is that people recognize that this is an epidemic, that there are ways to help people, that medication-assisted therapies, which are new and effective, are very, very important, and that the Congress and state legislators and governors have to take steps to enable people who are in an addictive environment. You mentioned prisons, Sean. Every single prison has a substantially large population of addicts, and they should have a very sophisticated, modern recovery program, so by the time they get out of prison, they're able to have a job and to rebuild their family and to reenter society. And if they come in as an addict and they leave as an addict, there's no possibility that they're going to be able to reintegrate into society. People who want to know more can go to opioidrecovery.org. And at opioidrecovery.org, they'll learn what Patrick and I are working on and what it was that's so powerful that brought the two of us together, clearly reaching beyond partisanship.
Unbelievable. I think it's great that you guys are doing this together. Now, Patrick, I assume you're supporting Hillary, right?
You bet. You bet, Sean. I know that's like gets your callers all wound up. So,
well, you know, I'm not going to get too deep in. You know, there was a funny story I can tell you about. So was it your uncle or your dad, Ted Kennedy? I don't know.
Ted's my dad.
Okay.
Ted's my dad.
So one day I had Kay Bailey Hutchinson. She's in like the Senate cloakroom or somewhere like that. And your dad would never come on my program. And I'm like, all right, I'll tell you what, Senator, I'm talking to Kay Bailey. I'm like, if you can get Senator Kennedy, you see him in the room there? She goes, yeah. I said, if you can go over and get him on this show, I'll give X number of dollars. I don't remember what it was at the time. If you get him to come on the program. And she actually got him to do it. You want to hear a little bit of it?
Yeah.
Forget, we won't play it. I don't think he has it. We have it in our archives there somewhere. Well, listen, I'm glad, and I mean this sincerely, you know, I don't think it's easy overcoming addiction, and you were able to do it, and I think the fact that you're trying to help other people is a great thing. Mr. Speaker, I know you've been working for years in health reformation and trying to help our healthcare system, which is in tatters right now in many ways, 40% increases now across the board when we were told we'd be saving $2,500 per family a year. I hope this is something that you can break this cycle of dependency. Thank you both.
Thank you, Sean.
All right, 800-941-SEAN is our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. All right, Martin is in Florida. Martin, hi. How are you? We're glad you called.
All right. How you doing, Sean, today? All
good,
right.
How are you? Yeah, good.
You want to talk about some of us Trump supporters that are all wound up, not only just the stuff that we're hearing about Hillary, but I'll tell you what. Where are the Romneys, the McCains, the George Will? Where's Karl Rove? Where is Cruz, Rubio? Why isn't everybody in an outrage? Why can't they stand up, even if they're not even considering Trump at this point? They can't stand up for the American people and let the American people see that at least somebody on the right cares about us?
Well, I got to tell you something. I don't understand how it is the country's not more outraged. I've been telling the story of Benghazi. I've had the Benghazi heroes in this studio even last week. I've been telling the story about how requests for security were denied. I'm telling the story how they were given a stand down order. I'm telling the story how we didn't even send help and Americans are under fire. And now we discover they're arguing about whether or not they should be in uniform or not and whether or not we need Libya's permission to go save our guys. And then we were lied to afterwards. The whole thing ought to make everybody sick.
Well, we see the clip all the time that Trump plays, or his opponents, they play against her. What does that matter? Okay, we see her attitude, according to even, I forget his name, the gentleman who wrote the book who stood out guard of the Oval Office. The same thing, the perception, the persona that they put out to the American people, but who are they really behind closed doors? And we see this.
Yeah.
I don't understand why the left side does not see this, people who support her. I don't understand it myself.
I don't either. You know? Gary Byrne, you know, I got to tell you, here's a guy, and that's the next thing. Then he gets smeared. You know, the guy gets smeared for telling the story, and his job was to take a bullet for the president of the United States. It's unbelievable. Everyone in Washington was watching on drones. They even had cameras that they won't release the videos about. They did nothing to help Americans being killed. And we had hours to save their lives, 10 hours. And then she lies to the families. It gets worse. Every time it gets worse. You know, I just, you know, I've gotten to meet Pat Smith. I've met Ty Woods' dad, Charles Woods. I've met his sisters and his, I think his brother and sisters. They're great people. They've come to my studio. I can't believe that this is how we treat our fellow countrymen, people that are dedicated to serve. Tonto Peronto and his guys, hey, they're like, we're ready. Let's go. No, you can't leave. What do you mean we can't leave? Americans are under fire. Then they defy orders, risk their entire careers, and go anyway, and two of them die. Those are Americans. Those are the people I love. And then they watch on TV as Hillary Clinton lies.
Born on America's darkest day, 9/11/01, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been helping American heroes ever since. And when a first responder or military service member doesn't come home and young kids are left behind, well, Tunnel to Towers, they pay the mortgage on the family home off to lift that financial burden. Now, for catastrophically injured veterans and first responders, Tunnel to Towers builds, well, mortgage-free smart homes that enables severely injured heroes to move around their homes more independently. And through the foundation's homeless vets program, Tunnel to Towers is providing housing and services to homeless vets. More than 3,300 were helped last year alone. And people who put their lives on the line for our country and our communities, they need your help more than ever. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good and never forget 9/11 or the sacrifices of this country's heroes. Donate $11 a month. Go to their website. It's the letter T, the number 2, the letter T.org, the letter T, the number 2, the letter T.org.
The following is a high-five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
Welcome to Burger Yippee. Would you like a hot apple pie today?
Yes, yes, yeah, I won! Woohoo!
So that's a yes on the apple pie?
I just went big time playing High Five Casino on my phone. Real cash prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. Yeah!
So yes or no on the apple pie?
Woo! I won again!
I'll take that as a yes. Drive around.
Have you had your high-five moment today? Only at HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
Hello, iHeart listener. We have a confession to make. Both iHeart and this commercial you're listening to right now would probably sound a heck of a lot better on the new Roku Pro Series TV. It's got side-firing speakers that fill your room with sound, Dolby Atmos audio that puts you right in the middle of the entertainment, and the ability to pair seamlessly with your home theater sound systems that already have surround sound and booming bass. If all that sounds too good to be true, it'll sound even better on the new Roku Pro Series. Your hearing isn't better, your TV is.